The hunter-gatherer paradox is that we may as well have been plucked out of nature and deposited unceremoniously in the modern world. We have not evolved for the modern world. There are a lot of things that large parts of the population experience, which is a product of the natural environment, lactose intolerance being one of those things. If you are from certain ethnic groups, then you'll have lactose intolerance, and in other ethnic groups you won't, which is a product of how long your ancestors have been consuming cow's milk. Now, the thing is, when we hear about that, we think, oh, that's a little irrelevant thing. But this actually applies to everything. It applies to our physiology and our psychology. We're the product of our ancestors in a lot of ways. Now, the thing is about these traits, they're not fundamentals, but what it does prove is that we're shaped by living in nature. And our physiology is a consequence of living in nature. And that natural environment isn't the modern artificial environment. But it's not just about the environment, it's also about the modern world, connection with others, or more relevant, lack of connection with others. So if we look back at our hunter-gatherer friends, they have very distinct personalities and they are perceived in a certain way. Everybody has some skill somewhere or another, and so they are attached to that skill. They might be the best hunter, they might be the best person at finding the honeybees nests, they might be the best person at finding a particular fruit or fishing or making the best arrowheads or something. Everybody has some skill, and so that skill is seen as part of who they are. But overall, their character is the thing that distinguishes them. Now, the thing is about the small group cultures is they're a lot tighter. And who you are develops within the group in front of everybody. In the modern world, we're constantly meeting new people with a different cultural perspective. And I'm not talking about people from different countries. Every family has a different cultural perspective. There's just a different set of responses to particular experiences. And because we're constantly iterating through this, meeting new people, having new experiences, connecting or not connecting or disconnecting in different ways, our physiology and our psychology is designed for a world where that doesn't happen. The lack of a tribe, the lack of the small group who are so deeply, intimately connected in the ways that our ancestors were, creates for us an undeniable feeling of separation. And it's not all that unusual, getting on for 50% of the population, feel lonely some or all of the time. And one of the many things that we've learned is that this loneliness isn't a product of being isolated per se, although obviously if for any reason you are isolated, you'll become lonely. It's more a product of how connected we feel and how fulfilling our interactions are with other people. And so this lack of fulfilling connection, this lack of sense of connection in a group, leaves us feeling separate, rejected, isolated, and lonely. Pick one, pick all, sometimes, all time, occasionally. It doesn't really matter. And I think this is the fundamental challenge, which is never discussed or even accepted, but it's undeniable. This is the fundamental challenge of the modern world, is our ability to connect. I was chatting to somebody earlier and it popped into my mind. Let's say I could just sprinkle connection dust on everybody in the world. Then the Israelis would connect to the Palestinians and the Ukrainians would connect to the Russians and the Chinese and the Americans would connect, and all of these people who are squabbling interminably about ideology and what's right and wrong and true and false and moral and ethical and so on and so forth would connect. Wouldn't the world be a different place? I'm beginning to sound a little bit like John Lennon here, but I'm not actually talking about necessarily the need to love everybody, although that's a wonderful thing. It's more about how separate we see ourselves from everybody else. And I have come to learn from speaking to various meditators who've taken all sorts of different paths, experience, other side of the world, secular, spiritual meditation, blah-de-blah-de-blah. It heals our sense of disconnection. And that starts with the body. Connect to our emotions, they stop becoming something to avoid and start to become part of us. And same with our thoughts, and then the thoughts and emotions of others begin to make sense. They don't make sense in that we can discern exactly what somebody else is thinking or even that there's any logic behind it. It's more a matter of the recognition that very often there's no logical foundation to whatever somebody might be doing. No benefit to them or anybody else. They're doing it because of the confusion that has caused them to feel the way they are. And then when you feel that confusion yourself and that discomfort, then it's easy to empathize and it makes more sense that people do and say things that aren't necessarily helpful. And once we get over that hurdle, then we're in a far better place. And this all happens through connection to the body. And so I'm not going to do anything different. The usual sorts of meditations. Don't know which ones I'll do. But all of them, they're all connecting us to the present moment, to the body, to the mind, to others, and to nature. So if you just like to get yourselves comfortable, and we can all connect to the present moment through the power of the bell as it moves through time and as we follow it through time. We've all learned to, in our own way, follow that sound into the experience of becoming aware of the present moment, passing through time, either through sound or through an awareness of the breath. Or through the passage of thoughts, mind moving through time. And what this does is it brings us into the present moment and brings us into our bodies. This experience of being present, being within our body, in the modern world we spend little time in our bodies, and little or no time at the intersection of time and our location in space. But that awareness of time passing and that awareness of our physical presence I have no doubt is how our ancestors would have spent much of their lives. And the breath is central to this experience of now. Because it achieves both of those objectives. We become aware of the passage of time, through the cycles of the breath. And it connects us to our physiology, to our bodies, to being right here, right now. And then the question arises, how do we connect to this? And the answer lies in the chin mudra. If we make the connection between the fingers and thumbs as light as we possibly can, so light that it's as if the first finger and thumb isn't actually Touching. Then we're learning light touch focus. And that light, soft, gentle focus on the breath is how we witness its cycle. So this isn't a sharp, deep, focused concentration. It's a light, soft, gentle awareness. So where you're aware of the breath is up to you. You can notice the breath in the belly, sense the breath filling and emptying the chest. Notice the breath entering and leaving the nostrils. It's all totally up to you. It's also useful to connect, to hook into the out breath, to release tension in the body. So if you have an open, balanced and relaxed posture, which you achieve by generally moving your elbows back to find the spot at which the head balances naturally, most comfortably, on the top of the spine. rising, belly falling. And it's fine for the mind to drift away from the experience of now, because we're training ourselves to notice that. So that's what repeats in a meditation. The mind wandering, we notice, bring our attention back. That moment of noticing is known as the moment of recognition. And we repeat it over and over again as we meditate. And incrementally over time, we then become more aware of our mind wandering. And then we can choose to return it back to our present moment experience. Nothing to be done. It's just a practice of witnessing, noticing the experience of the present moment and noticing that we've stopped noticing it and returning back to noticing it. And sometimes the mind wanders so much that we might prefer a practice to keep it engaged that still keeps us present. So we have the mantras, we have counting the breaths, we have noting thought when thought arises, and we can combine them. So what we're doing is counting the breaths. You're just noticing the breath. We'll stay with the breath for a few moments, just noticing the cycle. And then we count the breaths. One on the in-breath, two on the out-breaths. Three on the in-breath, four on the out-breath, up to 10. Reach 10, begin at 1. When we notice that we've lost count, what we do is label it. We're acknowledging that thought. So the mind may have wandered or a thought has arisen. And so we're acknowledging that thought. That's what one of the things that labeling or noting does. And we say in the mind, thinking. Then back to the breath. Counting the breaths, one on the in-breath, two on the out-breath, three on the out-in-breath, four on the out-breath, up to 10. Reach 10, begin at 1. We lose count, saying in the mind, thinking, and back to 1. This is a combination of counting the breaths and noting or labeling thoughts. Just practice that for the next few minutes. And again, noticing how sound and the breath synchronize, all moving through time at the same speed. As does the sound of the bell. Whenever you're ready, gently return your attention to your surroundings. So that is an exercise in practicing how our genetic blueprint operates for us. We're slipping back into a state of being that is part of our genetic heritage. This is what happens when we go into nature. Presence, mindfulness, experience of the present moment. Okay, so bless you all and catch up soon.